Coming up, a Lucky Severson story on the Kairos Prison Ministry. Thousands of trained volunteers going into prisons on weekends, bringing inmates good counsel, encouragement, and the message that they're loved. Also, Reverend Wayne Mizell helping seminary students bring justice to the poor. And the Jewish holiday of Shavuot, celebrating the harvest and the Torah, and proclaiming,
you should be really, really, really happy.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. News about changes in America's religious landscape generated much discussion this week. According to a new study by the Pew Research Center, the percentage of Christians in the country has declined significantly in the last 7 years. At the same time, the number of religiously unaffiliated rose rapidly. That includes atheists, agnostics, and those with no particular religion. The study found that evangelicals are the largest religious group at more than 25% of the population. The religiously unaffiliated are now the second largest group with nearly 23%. Catholics make up about 21%, mainline Protestants close to 15%, and other faiths 5.9%. Overall, America is about 70% Christian. In 2007, the country was about 78% Christian. Secularists praise the new numbers, although experts stress that the majority of the religiously unaffiliated do believe in God or a higher power. Christian leaders debated reasons behind the decline and pledged to find ways to reverse it. In Washington, President Obama joined a panel discussion on poverty at a Georgetown University conference of Catholic and evangelical leaders. He spoke about America's growing opportunity gap and praised people of faith for playing a unique role in the fight against poverty.
These faith-based organizations are interacting with folks who are struggling and know how good these people are and know their stories. And it's not just theological, but it's very concrete. They're embedded in communities, and they're making a difference in all kinds of ways.
Panel members also discussed the moral obligation of both Republicans and Democrats to create paths of upward mobility, especially for young people.
I'm talking about making poverty and the opportunity to escape from poverty a higher issue on both parties' agendas.
The Vatican sparked international debate this week after it announced a treaty with, quote, the State of Palestine. The agreement covers treatment of Catholic entities under Palestinian jurisdiction. While the Vatican has been referring to a Palestinian state since 2012, this agreement was viewed as a significant step toward formalizing recognition. Much of the international community does not recognize Palestinian sovereignty. American Jews were among those raising concerns that this move could further threaten the security of Israel. Last weekend, Pope Francis met with Cuban President Raul Castro at the Vatican. Francis will be visiting Cuba in September and is credited with helping to thaw relations between that nation and the U.S. The communist Castro said he was so impressed with Francis, he might start praying again and may even return to the church. International concern is rising over the plight of Rohingya Muslim and Bangladeshi migrants in Southeast Asia, thousands of whom are stranded at sea. The migrants are fleeing persecution and poverty. This week, several boats containing hundreds of people were rescued off the Indonesian coast. However, Malaysia turned away boats with hundreds more, drawing criticism from aid groups. The UN called on Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia to rescue incoming boats in order to avoid a humanitarian crisis. Aid groups say relief work continues in Nepal despite this week's powerful earthquake, the second in less than a month. More than 8,000 were killed and millions displaced after the April 25th quake. Dozens more were killed in this week's quake. Many humanitarian groups from around the world have been sending in food, water, and medicine and helping to provide shelter. We have a Lucky Severson story today about the Kairos Prison Ministry. For more than 30 years, trained volunteers have been going into prisons on weekends to try to transform the lives of inmates with messages of good counsel, encouragement, and the conviction that they're loved. Also, at one prison on one recent weekend, with 24,000 chocolate chip cookies.
It must come as a surprise, even a shock, to these inmates, this warm, loving reception at the Branchville Correctional Facility, a medium security prison in Indiana. The volunteers greeting them are from the Kairos Prison Ministry, and this is the beginning of an intense 72-hour experience the ministry hopes will transform the lives of the inmates who signed up.
I came here because everybody says it's pretty awesome, and you get to eat some pretty good food. So,
Branchville Superintendent, or Warden, Kathy Alvey says good food is definitely a motivator in prison.
A lot of the guys will joke around that they're going to go to Kairos for the food that they bring in, and they bring truckloads of food. But you know, when they leave that weekend, they leave with more than a full belly. Their hearts are filled.
I cry every weekend, I do. You know, you couldn't imagine how much you get out of it.
Today, John Nuffer is one of the volunteers, but he was in Branchville on a drug charge when he first experienced a Kairos weekend.
You know, I had Christianity all wrong. I had a false stereotype of Christians, and I could never be one. I wasn't going to come to prison and be one, and I didn't want the jailhouse religion. I didn't have it on the streets. I wasn't going to have it here.
But he did get it here during a Kairos weekend. These are deeply personal, soul-searching affairs with one-on-one mentoring and group discussions about things like choices and friendship with God. Volunteers from local churches send uplifting messages from little kids, and for this weekend, 24,000 chocolate chip cookies. There are also services in the makeshift chapel punctuated with uplifting hymns.
We seek out the tough cases. Those are the guys we want. When God gets a hold of their heart and they start, and the wall starts to crumble, and it's like peeling back an onion, one layer at a time.
It's a journey that becomes more spiritual as it goes along from one motivational speaker to the next. This is a very organized and scripted 72 hours. Kairos has been doing this for over three decades. Kairos operates in 35 states, 9 foreign countries, over 400 medium and maximum security prisons. The program only has 9 employees, but over 30,000 volunteers. It's the volunteers that make the program work, and volunteering for Kairos is not easy. John Bennett had a brother who died in prison. The retired welder has been volunteering for over 8 years.
We have to have 34 hours of training. We just don't come in. We're all trained and schooled in what to do.
We come together as a team of brothers. We don't just come as a bunch of guys who don't know each other. We build a love and bond between us. Now, when we come up here, they see that in us. And then that gives them an opportunity and a hope for them to have that too.
David Leibel is with the Indiana Department of Corrections in charge of volunteers.
We get volunteers who otherwise might not have any contact with the criminal justice system who come in, give up their days, their weekends to be with the prisoners. And even when they're quiet, it shouts caring.
Michael Dyer is the state director of Kairos for Indiana, a volunteer himself who puts in many, many hours each year.
Usually 42 offenders for a full team. That's the maximum amount of offenders who can participate in a Kairos weekend. We generally have 44 to 48 team members who come in from the outside, so it's almost one-to-one.
Kairos is a non-denominational ministry that preaches plenty of religion, though the parts about fire and brimstone are never mentioned. This is an upbeat experience. One of the most important goals here is to convince the inmates that they are loved.
Here, we're a DOC number. I'm DOC number 984463. No, and that's what we are. We, for the most part, we've been relegated from humans to numbers, to paperwork.
Dontell Keys is serving a sentence for murder. He says Kairos changed his life, so now he wants to change the lives of fellow inmates. This weekend, he's serving as a volunteer in the kitchen. He's scheduled to be released in 2 years.
We've done things in our life that we're regretful for, and to come to a Kairos weekend and just to feel the love and the passion that these men have for us, it's amazing. So you really just get caught up in that, you know, just being loved, because a lot of us never have experienced that love.
Love also comes in the form of a sealed letter. Frank Rowe is with Kairos.
I call them love letters from God. Each volunteer writes a letter to every single participant.
We received our letters and got to open them and read them, and it was a pretty touching experience.
John Cox is in on a meth charge and was surprised to see his old street pal, Ed Morris, who also served time, now a volunteer, trying to get John to turn a new page.
John and I, we have a past of not so honest citizens kind of past. You know, we got involved into the drug scene pretty heavily for a while, and we was... You know, we've made some dope together before. We used to sell a lot of dope. We've done, you know, we've seen the bad side of the life.
Branchville has about 1,450 inmates at any one time. Most are here on drug charges, though there are some serving out sentences for more violent crimes. Those here in solitary confinement are not feeling the love.
And we're praying for you.
So Kairos volunteers deliver bags of chocolate chip cookies and prayers to the segregation unit and throughout the prison.
God bless you, my friend.
Forgiveness is a big theme here, and that includes inmates especially forgiving themselves.
For me, when I went through that moment and I was asked to forgive everyone in my life, and including myself, it was the first time in nearly 20 years that I've shed a tear. I had to let it all go. You know, Kairos helped me do that, and it's just an amazing feeling.
Although there have been few studies, one in Florida found that in prisons where Kairos operates, recidivism has been cut to less than half the usual rate. Michael Dyer says there's another way to measure the ministry's impact.
Everyone I see involved in this ministry, whether they be a volunteer or an offender, this program and going through a Kairos program changes their life. And watching and witnessing that transformation is just... incredible feeling that you can be a part of that.
Cedric Hancock is a retired Army veteran and 4 years a volunteer. He's mentoring William Spradley, sentenced to 10 years for selling meth.
I love you, and I'm glad we met, and all I can do is just thank the Lord.
I appreciate you leading me on the right path.
You want to give me some love? All right, now.
Love you, my brother.
Love you, bro.
Now Kairos will follow up back in prison with weekly and monthly prayer and share sessions to keep the love going and hopefully the men going straight. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson at the Branchville Correctional Facility in Indiana.
We have a profile now of Reverend Wayne Meisel, a Presbyterian minister with no church, but with a strong sense of calling. He says the country's young people, millennials, are deeply committed to doing work, usually not for profit, that will help make the world a better place. Think Teach for America or AmeriCorps. Meisel's message is that churches ought to do the same kind of thing and that seminary students should lead the way. Wayne Meisel is an ordained Presbyterian minister who has made it his mission to help seminary students help the poor. He's supported by several foundations, churches, and friends. He travels to schools all over the country, but his home base is the Princeton Theological Seminary in New Jersey.
We have a generation of young people in their 20s and 30s that define themselves by their commitment to service and justice work. The challenge is that many of them, I think most of them, do not believe the church cares about them or the causes they care about. There is this bubbling fervor and energy and possibility that we just have to figure out how to both tap and how to support, and then for guys like me, how to get out of the way.
Craig Barnes is the president of Princeton Theological Seminary.
Wayne is a fascinating, charismatic kind of leader. He works best kind of on the margins of schools and churches and organizations, and he's a visionary, but he doesn't work through a system. He works with the students themselves, and he excites the students, and they become all caught up in his vision of changing the world and thinking that their life can make a real difference. And this is not just happening at Princeton. This is happening in seminaries all over the country. So it is a phenomena. The students are asking different questions in class. Our professors are developing their syllabi differently to account for this passion they have to not just study ethics, but to do ethics along the way. These students actually are devoted to loving thy neighbor. And they won't tolerate anymore sitting in class taking notes on wonderful lectures about social responsibility than folding up their laptops and just going home.
On the Princeton Seminary campus on a beautiful spring morning, we talked with students who know Meisel. One way or another, each spoke of the need for change.
If we don't do it, if seminaries don't do it, who will? If the church doesn't speak to the moral and the ethical issues that are confronting our country, who should?
I understand my role as a Christian as working towards justice in our communities.
You're going to be a pastor?
Yes, God willing. I think we could make great strides if seminarians started working together nationally and schools across the board started training students to be the kind of pastors that can make these changes.
The National Service Project, AmeriCorps, had as one of its architects, among many others, Wayne Meisel. It has no religion component, but the movement Meisel wants would be Christian within limits.
The slogan for the movement that I'm a part of and that I see is for the whole world to know Christ's love. That doesn't mean people need to be Christian. It means that the people that identify themselves as Christians need to be showing that grace, showing that hospitality, showing that acceptance.
By example, not by proselytizing.
If they think that the tradition that they're claiming, the Christian tradition, is being judgmental or exclusive or worse to their Jewish friends, to their Muslim friends, to their agnostic friends, then they're going to want no part of it. And I don't want any part of it.
I asked Meisel whether what he wants could become political.
God, I hope so. We're called to be advocates. So we can't just sit around and talk about something. We can't just show up and hand out a hamburger or dish out soup. We have to make a commitment to be in relationship with people and to walk with them and to see what are the things that are at the root of some of these challenges and then moving forward with that so that people can have decent lives where they can take care of their families and have a sense of who they are.
13 miles from the campus of Princeton Seminary is another world of the homeless in Trenton. The director of the rescue mission there is Mary Gay Abbott Young. She said she once told Meisel she had a project.
Wayne, I need this done. He said, what you need is seminary students.
So Meisel produced the students, and they helped the homeless with the paperwork necessary to get shelter and care.
It is truly a relationship that forms in a matter of minutes that the client says, this is someone who I can trust. We've now had hundreds of people get welfare who couldn't get welfare before that. How life-changing is that for them? Yeah.
Not far from the Trenton Mission is a Presbyterian church with an after-school program, also staffed in part by seminarians. Karen Hernandez-Granzen is the pastor.
I think he has met a need that these young people have, these seminarians, and that is to immediately put their book knowledge into practice, to not get caught up in the ivory tower of their seminaries, but to walk the talk.
With the decline of Christendom in the West, you could call it, there's been a need for civic engagement, to find new meaning. We're embarking on something of a new world, and it's at least my hope that the church finds a good place there as well.
Neither Meisel nor anyone else can predict whether a national movement of seminary students could change neighborhoods and lives, but Meisel is confident it can happen.
Here I stand, I can do no other. I can claim a role that speaks of a message of inclusion, of joy, of love, of service, of justice. That's what I get to do.
A professor friend of Meisel's told us Meisel can spend 5 minutes with someone and change his or her life. He said, "I've seen it happen." On our calendar this week, Baha'is observe the Declaration of the Bab, the day in 1844 when a spiritual leader known as the Bab announced that he'd been sent to prepare the way for God's universal messenger. And next weekend, Jews celebrate the festival of Shavuot, honoring God's gift of the Torah to Moses. We visited the Sixth and I Historic Synagogue in Washington, D.C., and talked with Rabbi Shira Stutman about the holiday.
The Shavuot holiday is actually one of the more important holidays in the Jewish tradition, and it basically has two reasons for being. The original reason comes out of the Israelite people being an agricultural people a few thousand years ago in the land that we now call Israel. The Israelites would bring the bikurim, the first fruits, the first offerings of their harvest, up to the temple as an offering to God, as a way of saying thank you and in hopes of a good harvest. After the temple was destroyed in about 70 CE, the rabbis needed to enlarge the understanding of Shavuot because we no longer had a temple to which people could bring their offerings. So they brought forward this understanding of Shavuot as being the anniversary of revelation. The anniversary of the moment that God gave the Torah, our Bible, or part of the Hebrew Bible, to the Israelite people on Mount Sinai, basically turning them from this ragtag group of slaves who had just weeks ago come out of Egypt into a people, complete with its own set of texts and ways of being in the world. Shavuot, actually probably more than any other holiday on the Jewish calendar, is very difficult for American Jews in the 21st century to wrap their hands around. And one of the reasons is because there are not a lot of the same home-based rituals that we have, for instance, with the Passover Seder or lighting the Hanukkah menorah. You are seeing more and more people trying to engage Jewish people and Jewish families in the Shavuot holiday in unusual ways. And that's what Six and I is doing tonight. People using traditional Jewish texts to have contemporary conversations. How does my life have meaning? What are the 10 Jewish commandments of sports? How do we take this tradition that's been going on for thousands of years and make it relevant to us today? It is traditional to read the Book of Ruth because it is a book about the barley harvest. It's also about what happens in a society where there are haves and have-nots, and how we can act as people who have more or people who have less and engage each other to make sure that there's more equity and social justice in the world. Some of the other traditions you're going to see here tonight are the making of cheesecake and challah, because on Shavuot the understanding is that we're supposed to eat dairy foods, because on the day that the Israelites received the Torah, they also ate dairy foods. There are not a lot of laws that are specific to Shavuot, but one of the laws that's specific to Shavuot is V'hayita ach sameach, that you should be really, really, really happy. And on the Shavuot holiday, it is a time of rejoicing, rejoicing in the harvest, rejoicing in this gift of Torah that God has given us, and rejoicing in the ability to learn from Torah in each and every generation. A tikkun leil Shavuot. That's what you're seeing us do here tonight. Stay up all night and study Jewish text.
Finally, Catholics in El Salvador are getting ready for the beatification next weekend of the late Salvadoran Archbishop Oscar Romero. Romero was assassinated in 1980 after speaking out against El Salvador's military government. His path to sainthood had been blocked for many years because of the Vatican's concerns about his allegedly leftist politics and liberation theology. Pope Francis declared Romero a martyr earlier this year, which cleared the way for his beatification, the last step before sainthood. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, celebrations in Liberia after that nation was officially declared Ebola-free. Almost 5,000 Liberians died in the year-long Ebola epidemic. The crisis continues in neighboring countries.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.